You're listening to the Toolstation Western League podcast with Ian Knuckles and Tom Hiscott.
Welcome, listeners, to episode 31 of the Toolstation Western League podcast with me, Ian Knuckles. But I am not joined today by Tom Hiscott, the editor of the Western League Bulletin. Tom's been rained off. Well, he's been postponed this week because we didn't really have a great deal of football to talk about. So I thought I'd take this opportunity to take the podcast in a slightly different direction. And it gives me great pleasure to welcome, I think for the first time, the finance officer of the Toolstation Western League. It is Mr. Dave Brammer. Hello, Dave. How are you?
Hello, Ian. Great to talk to you. I'm really well, thanks. And it's very nice to see some sunshine at long last.
Yes, let's hope it holds. Now, for those
yes,
of you
indeed.
Who are reaching for the dial thinking, why on earth would I be interested in listening to an interview with the finance officer of the Toolstation Western League? I can assure you that Dave is a far more interesting person to talk to than that. And that's really what this interview is going to be focusing on. Because, Dave, you were a match official. Am I right in thinking that actually you were a match official in the Premier League?
Yes, I did do an all too short a spell on the Premier League as an assistant referee, but thoroughly enjoyed it. And I also did 14 years on the Football League as an assistant referee.
So what were some of the grounds that you officiated at?
Right, well, this is name dropping. Some of them don't exist anymore, of course, and a lot of them don't exist anymore, but I was fortunate enough to go to Highbury, White Hart Lane, Villa Park, Old Trafford, which was very memorable, and the Dell when Southampton played there. Oh yes, I'm sorry, but always a better atmosphere at Fratton Park, Ian.
Thank you, Dave.
and yes, some memorable trips to Bristol City and to Bristol Rovers, both at when they played at Twerton Park and at the Memorial Stadium. Always enjoyed going to Bristol Rovers because there was somebody in the crowd who must have been a season ticket holder. And every time I went there, at some stage during the game, I knew I was going to get a shout from behind of, "Linesman, you were rubbish on the Suburban League and you're rubbish now." And I always used to surreptitiously put my thumb up behind my back to let him know that I'd heard it. But yeah, happy memories.
Well, that's some of the grounds and obviously some of the spectators. And I guess, and I know from some of the conversations we've had off air that some of the things that were said to you, we can't broadcast in this interview.
No.
But what about the players? I guess that must be one question that people ask you about, you know, who were the hardest players to officiate?
In the professional game, undoubtedly, probably because he was so competitive and it was the way he played the game, the most difficult person was Craig Bellamy. He was an absolute nightmare. You couldn't speak to him and he could say whatever he wanted to you. There were a lot of characters on the Western League as well. There's no doubt about that. I probably shouldn't name any of them, but they were good characters in the fact that once the game was over, it tended to be that you would have a much more social time than is possible these days and have a good chat over a drink in the bar afterwards.
Because that's the players, but I guess actually because you were a linesman, you must have also come into contact with technical areas. And I guess perhaps the question I should have asked you were, maybe I shouldn't be unfair and say the most difficult, but perhaps who were some of the more memorable coaches and managers that you came across in your time in the game?
Yeah, Neil Warnock is one that stands out immensely. When Neil Warnock was manager of Plymouth Argyle, I was assistant referee on a Saturday down there, and Neil wasn't overly impressed with the referee's performance, which may come as a surprise to you and your listeners, but occasionally Neil doesn't support what the referee decides. And he gave me quite a torrid afternoon, and I had to work really hard to avoid getting him sent from the technical area. But it wasn't the most pleasant of afternoons. But on the Tuesday following, I was appointed to referee Plymouth Argyle Reserves. And I went down to Home Park and was walking along the corridor with my kit bag towards the dressing room, and who was approaching me in the opposite direction but the aforementioned Mr. Warnock. As we got closer, he held his hand out, shook my hand warmly and said, "You and I can't go on meeting like this." And you think that I'm sure that what he does, a lot of what he does, is for effect on the day. But he's very good at what he does do. He's been doing it for so long. So Neil Warnock certainly is the name that jumps immediately to mind. But anybody who played for Liverpool and then went into management, Graham Souness, Steve McMahon, Jan Mulby, they were always very, very difficult people to stand in front of for 90 minutes. Other characters that you could look at, undoubtedly Alan Ball, and a name that some of the Bristol Rovers fans may remember either fondly or not, Mark McGee. Oh. Mark was manager of Reading, and they were winning in a game at Exeter. I think they were winning 4-1, and Exeter pulled it back to 4-4. And Mark felt that the fourth goal I should have signalled offside for. And gave me the benefit of his advice in no uncertain terms. I did feel a little bit for him because his side, they were going for promotion. They'd just been pegged back from 4-1 to 4-4. And as I say, I did feel a little bit sorry for him. So I gave him the benefit of the doubt. And he actually wrote to me to apologise after the game to say that he was wrong, that it was a good goal. And he realised what a difficult job we all have to do when we're making these decisions, and thanking me for being so patient with him. And I thought that was a really, really nice thing for him to do.
Yeah, that's the side of the relationship between managers and match officials that perhaps we don't hear enough about. And I know that your role, particularly with, well, your role with ref support, but you have other roles in terms of refereeing, that the development of referees and the sort of the pastoral care that the game gives to match officials is very important to you, isn't it?
It is. And I think for me, the world's view of refereeing has changed immeasurably from when I was an active official. And match officials are now seen as fair game, particularly in the professional game where everything is scrutinised down to the nth degree. And one can decide that a referee has made an error, and 2 minutes later somebody scores a goal, and it's the fault of the fact that the referee made an error, allegedly made an error 2 minutes before. That is huge scrutiny and pressure put on people, but that will filter down into the lower reaches of the game, and even to ourselves as a semi-professional league. And what I'd like people to just think about is that, yes, they pay their money and they want to go along and they want to have a good time, and yes, they did, no reason why they can't shout at officials. But when they shout abuse and it actually drives somebody away from the game, it's short-termism, because why would anybody decide that they want to go out and be abused for £35 on a Saturday afternoon when they could be doing something which is a little less stressful? And we could come to a point where, as a league, we will not have the manpower to provide assistant referees for every game. And that's a real, real concern. So I just ask your listeners out there, just have a little bit of thought and compassion and say, do we really want to drive people away from doing this role? Because refereeing is not for everybody. And so let's not drive away those that are prepared to go out and do it week in, week out.
We've spoken in the past on the podcast mostly about player retention because of issues around, I mean, obviously we've spoken about mental health, but we were conscious of the impact that the pandemic and the lockdowns had. And we've talked about the fact that there are fewer men playing football on a Saturday afternoon, and in the context of our league, obviously you're acutely aware of the impact that the long distance travel has on whether players want to play at our level or they're happier to play at lower levels outside of the national league system, purely for social as much as economic reasons. So we've looked at players, we've looked at volunteers as well, because obviously, you know, there's a lot of demands on their time, the people who run our clubs, but we shouldn't forget match officials in that equation. In your experience, Dave, when you look back over the last 20 years, do you think we are seeing fewer and fewer people making themselves available to be match officials?
Yes, you can see it. You can see it on the local parks where there is a shortage every week of referees to go out. And as you rightly say, there's fewer divisions now because less people are playing 11-a-side men's football on Saturday afternoon. And the pandemic didn't help because people realised that there are other things than football. I'm not sure if you spoke to my wife that she would subscribe to me believing that, but people do find other things to do. And match officials do step back for all sorts of reasons. They get older, they can't run about anymore, or they just get fed up of the weekly routine of actually not enjoying it. Because there's only one reason that you actually start refereeing football matches, and that's because you enjoy the involvement with football. Because you certainly don't do it for the money.
Because I don't want to be ageist in this conversation, but I have certainly noticed, well, in my experience, and I'm prepared, you know, if I'm wrong, Dave, you correct me. But in my experience, it feels to me like the match officials, certainly that I see in the Western League, they appear to be getting older. And this, to my mind, the logical reason I would assume that this is the case is because there is fewer and fewer people, say, in the younger generation who are prepared to make the commitment to become a match official. I mean, have I got a point there?
I think you have got a point. I'm not sure it's quite as simplistic as that, because there is a greater desire from the Football Association to push talent through as quickly as it can. So younger referees with ability do tend to move through the system more quickly. That in turn creates a problem for those who aren't progressing as quickly as they might like. And I think we might lose a proportion of match officials because their ambition isn't matched by the opportunities that they're given. So I think there's lots of factors that come into play. I think that the opportunities for somebody coming into the game at a young age as a referee are huge now, absolutely immense. The promotion path in my dinosaur days used to be that you started off as a level three, and once they'd let you be a level three for 5 or 6 years, they might let you be a level two, and you'd serve an apprenticeship at that, and then they might let you loose as being a level one. It could take you something akin to 6 or 7 years to get from a level three to a level one, with level one obviously being the highest that you could get to, and then you would be invited for other promotions. Now there are more levels but the opportunity to pass through each level is that you can be promoted every 6 months if you're good enough. So from starting out as a referee, you could, in theory, be operating in the professional game in 3 years.
One of the reasons I made the observation about age is that I think that we don't necessarily see match officials as human beings. You know, we see them as the uniform that they wear, and that perhaps is part of the reason why players and supporters at times treat them in the way that they do. But I guess one of the challenges is when people say, I think the standard of officiating is getting worse, that may well be the case. And if it is the case, it's the case as a consequence of fewer and fewer people wanting to take on the role. So you've almost got like a chicken and an egg situation. You know, be careful what you wish for, because actually by continuing to give our match officials a hard time and by continuing not to see them for the people that they are, you actually, all you're doing is driving them out of the game.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't agree with you more on that, Ian. And the human side is so important. And for people to think that a referee may go out and have a bad match and there are no consequences to them, it's not the facts at Western League level. We have referees promoted and demoted every season, and you will not find a referee on the Western League pool of match officials who wants to find himself in a situation or herself in a situation where they're likely to be demoted. So there is a huge amount of pride in their own personal performance when they go out there. And they're not going to get everything right every week and every game, because we're seeing people who are still learning, in the same way as a professional club may bring a young player in and perhaps play that young player for one or two games and then pull them out of the squad just to help aid their development and not try and push them in too far with it. And to some extent, that's the case with refereeing, that they get promoted, they go out and they do the games and they have to settle into it and learn into it. And as in normal walks of life with work, every promotion brings its own fresh challenges.
I should have probably asked you this earlier in the interview, Dave, but what made you get involved in refereeing in the first place?
I think it was the fact that the team I played for got relegated 4 seasons in succession. And I kind of realised that if I wanted to get involved in football at a reasonable level, it probably wasn't by going out and playing. I went to watch Bristol City play, and it was a night game, and we went for a drink after the game. And I was berating the referee's performance, because I think Bristol City probably lost that night. It was around the time when they were usually losing every game. And this gentleman who I'd never met before came over and he said, "You don't know the first thing about refereeing." And he persuaded me to do a course, and I thought, I'll give this a go. And I actually found that I enjoyed it.
So where did you... I mean, I know you've told us about your appalling performances in the Suburban League, but all joking aside,
yes,
is that where you started?
Yes, I did. I started... I did a few youth games to just get a feel for refereeing. And then my first game was in 1977. It was National Smelting Company... third team against Southmead Athletic Reserves in Division 7 of the Suburban League. And it's a day I remember fondly.
I mean, that's a piece of history right there, but that tells us so much about where football has come from and where it is today, because the idea of 7 divisions in our district leagues is virtually unheard of now.
Absolutely, absolutely. And... The erosion of Saturday afternoon football is it's a shame, but there are so many other pressures on people within life now and calls on their time. But yeah, it is a shame to see that go. And of course, a lot of teams that were going when I started refereeing, and a lot of teams that were in the Western League when I started going, have either moved on to higher things or have disappeared completely. And that's kind of a shame when I think of some happy times I had on the Western League at Clandown and at Portway Bristol. It's a shame to see those clubs no longer in existence.
Did you think you'd get out of the you'd ever get out of the Suburban League? And obviously your progression took you from the bottom to the very top level of the game.
It was an ambition. I mean, I started refereeing at 21 years of age, and I just wanted to get as high as I could. And just kept pushing and pushing all the way through until eventually, yeah, I was lucky enough to have the opportunity to officiate at the highest level, and I'm very, very grateful for that opportunity. But it was always there. Once you get to one level, I always wanted to push on to the next one.
Now, I am going to ask you about the role of the finance officer within the Western League, but I think it's really important that we cover off what your role in football is today, because you're still very much involved with match officials and developing them, aren't you?
I've got quite a few hats that I wear. I'm the Western League representative on the South West Pool of Match Officials, who we try and organise within the pool, within what we can, with looking after our match officials and making sure that things run smoothly from that perspective. I'm a trustee of Ref Support, which you alluded to earlier. I am the Referee Observer Support Officer for the South West, and I do observing, which your listeners may well still understand as assessing of referees, usually two games a week. So that's where my passion is at the moment, is in the observing of referees, and trying to give them advice that will help them to become better referees than I ever was.
Because for the people who are for the fans, obviously, particularly at our level, one of the things that we get really excited about is that diamond in the rough, that very rare commodity of a player who has played in the Toolstation Western League or at Step 5 and 6 at any club in the country, and who has gone on to make a professional career for themselves. And I know from my time around Midsummer Norton, the likes of Steve Phillips and Ashley Barnes are very well thought of because they achieved just that. And of course, in Wiltshire, where I live, Tyrone Mings and his association with, albeit brief, but his association with Corsham Town is something that's celebrated, particularly when he got his first England cap. But I guess you're looking at the development of match officials in a different way. So are there officials that you have supported over the years, that you have mentored and developed, that perhaps the listeners might have heard of?
Yes, I'm not sure I can lay claim to mentoring or coaching anybody who's gone on to particularly high things. But I did work with Steve Dunn, who went on to become a FIFA referee and a Premiership referee for many, many years, highly thought of. And I've done him with my assessor's hat on. I've seen Sam Allison in action, a very, very good referee and a very, very nice man as well, who over the Christmas period refereed his first Premiership game. And it's nice to see the South West actually getting some representation down in the Premiership, because for too long we've been without any representation from this part of the world. But now we've got Sam, we've got Simon Hooper as well, and at Football League level, until recently, we had Kevin Johnson and Brett Huxtable, and they were all Western League referees in their time.
We are going to have a very brief chat about the finance role. I think before I do ask you what the finance director of the Western League does, I think we want to put it in a context that the listeners can... is perhaps more relevant to the listeners' relationship with the game. We're obviously all very acutely aware of the cost of living crisis. So financially, when you look at the state that the league's in and the financial challenges that you know the clubs are facing, what's the landscape looking like in our game?
I think it's still very tough out there, very tough indeed. And when you get prolonged periods of bad weather like this, it's not helping the cash flow of clubs at all. So we as a league endeavour to be as sympathetic as we possibly can to those situations. As a league, we're very, very fortunate in that we have a fantastic sponsorship package through Toolstation. But having a long background in finance, I'm exceedingly cautious. So my aim is always to have enough money available for the league to survive a year without any sponsorship, so that if something did occur with Toolstation, we wouldn't notice the difference whilst we tried to find an alternative sponsor. But I sincerely hope that Toolstation continue their fantastic support for the league for as long as they possibly can.
Can you give a couple of examples of the things that clubs benefit from, thanks to the Toolstation sponsorship?
Yes, indeed. The Toolstation enable us to be able to provide free footballs to the clubs at the start of the season. They enable us to be able to provide prize money to every club that completes a season within the league, which is done on a sliding scale from top to bottom. And over COVID, it enabled us to be able to offer financial support to clubs. And in the last two seasons, we've tried to be innovative, thinking on our feet with regards to assistance with travel costs. And we've put a substantial amount of money into supporting our premier teams with their travel costs for this season, which has been done as fairly as we could on a mileage basis. But at the same time, we've had to bear in mind that we've got a first division where the travel distances aren't the same, and we don't want our first division clubs to suffer. They should be treated fairly. So essentially, we operate a two-tier system where the Premier Division get a travel subsidy and less prize money, and the First Division get full prize money and no travel subsidy.
One of the other things that I've been conscious of from our board meetings is that also we operate a benevolent fund. Now, I know that isn't directly linked to the Toolstation sponsorship, but obviously the money that the league get has been used to support players when they've had serious injury.
Yes, and I think it's something that helps players. It's not the answer to everything, but when you hear that players have suffered serious injuries, it's never nice, and it's traumatic both in terms of the injury and in terms of the fact that they may not be getting paid or a lower wage. And so we operate the benevolent fund, and we always go back to the club and say, in the event that the injury goes on for longer than originally planned, or there is additional financial hardship for the player, please come back to us. And on occasion, we have made additional awards as well. Obviously, our hope is that we don't have to, and that the player regains full fitness and comes back and continues playing Western League football.
So I will ask that question now, just so that the listeners understand. You know, in terms of your official role as finance officer, what does that actually what does that entail, Dave? What's your job description?
My job description: I pay the bills, and I collect in monies that are due to the league through subscriptions and fines and. Sorry to mention fines. Hopefully we don't have too many of those. We prefer not to. Football sales, negotiations with sponsors, negotiations over football deals, and really just making sure that the league remains solvent, and then obviously liaising with the league's accountants every year to get the... to get the accounts in order and submitted to Companies House, and to make sure the VAT gets paid on time as well. Shouldn't forget that one.
Dave, thank you so much for giving us your time. You've been very generous with your time. And I think I'd like to ask you one final question, which really goes back to the heart of I know what your passion is in the game. If you'd like to see one change in the game, if you could change one thing, what would it be to improve the support and the development that's provided to match officials?
For me, I think it would be if we could get sufficient manpower for referees at Western League level and above to be designated a mentor stroke coach that they could go to and discuss their upcoming games and their performances on past games, and actually start to see a clear development path go through for them and say, what have assessors been picking up on your games regularly? How do you feel about this? What can we do to change it? And just have sufficient manpower to be able to offer that service to all our match officials. I'm afraid that that's unlikely to happen, but it would be great if it did.
Dave, I really appreciate you taking the time to speak to us. It's been lovely to have you on the podcast. For the benefit of the listeners, Tom did manage to cobble together a bulletin over the weekend, so I would direct you to the Tool Station League website to download that if you haven't already seen it. And, well, the weather forecast hopefully is looking a little bit more optimistic, so hopefully next week we'll have an opportunity to return to the more traditional format of the Tool Station Western League podcast.